Patrick Rick with us as we talk about his work, The Abbey and Me. We'll take your calls, exorcisms, and other strange things. I do want to get into the curse of that mansion when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back, Patrick Rick with us. First of all, Patrick, if people want to see the documentary that you produced about this monastery and what it truly looks like, how do they find it?
I've made it easy, and the price is right. Just go to YouTube and put the title of the book, The Abbey and Me.
YouTube is free, Patrick.
I realize that. Did I make a mistake?
No, not at all. I think that's a great deal. Let me ask you about the curse, and we'll talk about some other issues there. So let's get into this curse again. What do you think happened there? So the lady's daughter dies, right?
I'm sorry, repeat?
The lady's daughter dies before the place is even finished.
Yes, and she lived there in a very lonely existence. There was nothing significant that took place while she was living there by herself, or at least nothing that I'm aware of, except for the fact that she was there, during the beginning of World War II, and the neighbors, the farmers, people around there, they never could quite understand where did the money come from to build this place in the woods, this lavish mansion in the woods. And there were rumors that she was there with German money, and that she was doing something that was going to be hostile toward the United States during the war. Well, nothing could really be further from the truth. That was not the case, but
rumors.
You were asking a question?
No, I'm just saying rumors. Rumors will do that.
Absolutely, just rumors. And
are you there?
Hi, sir.
There you are.
People loved her, and so she decided she was going to give this place away, and she just did. She picked up the telephone. She called a priest friend back in Mount Kisco, New York, and she says, I want you to draw up the papers, make arrangements. I want to give this place to the Alexian brothers.
Just like that?
Just like that. So the Alexian brothers came down from Oshkosh. And they were delighted to have the place. And you'll be interested in this, George. This novitiate, this monastery, was going to be built in St. Louis. Glendale, is that the, am I correct with the name, Glendale?
That there is a town there called Glendale, yes.
That is where this place was going to be built. But almost immediately when the property was given to the Alexian brothers, they scrapped the plans to put it in Glendale, and they said, let's move this monastery, this training facility for young brothers, and we'll put it in Gresham, Wisconsin.
Do the brothers still exist? I haven't heard much about them.
The brothers certainly do exist. These guys have hung in there for 800 years. The numbers have diminished, but show me a group of priests, show me an order of nuns that had not diminished over the years, and I would be surprised. So this, they have suffered the way many of religious Catholic and non-Catholic organizations have diminished. But the Alexian brothers are still there. They are in St. Louis. They are in Chicago. They are in Signal Mountain, Tennessee. They are in Europe and England and Ireland, and they've hung on, and they've continued to do well under the circumstances of religious organizations having a very tough road to hoe.
Sure. And Patrick, how did they get their revenue? I mean, were they financed by the Catholic Church because they're Catholic? So did they finance them? Did they fund them?
Well, that's a good question. I have never been terribly involved in the finances. I can tell you that the Alexian brothers for years have maintained hospitals, And, of course, they have been nonprofit, but nonetheless, reimbursement issues have always allowed the Alexian Brothers to provide the best in medical care. I mean, there are new hospitals belonging to the Alexian Brothers having recently been built in Chicago. There is, I believe it's Hoffman Estates in Chicago. The Alexian Brothers have a first-class, award-winning psychiatric facility there. So they've continued to do very well over the years.
Off the beaten path somewhat, the Catholic Church has gotten involved in a heavy way with observatories, the exorcisms, making statements about, the belief in extraterrestrial life doesn't negate our belief in a God. What do you think, Patrick? Just tell us your thoughts on this. What do you think they're trying to get at here?
Well, are you speaking of our newest pope and his...
Well, I guess the last several popes. I mean, they just seem to be more open to the possibility of life beyond this planet.
Well, in this modern society where we are finding out more and more about things that are inaccurate or things that were never known to have been accurate, I think we're finding out more and more. And that's not just religious organizations. Science in general is reaching out and learning more and more. I'm really not an authority in that area, and I wish that I could give you an interesting answer, but I'll have to tell you, I'm one of the same people that are out there right now just wanting to know more and waiting for the next foot to fall.
Yeah, we're going to take calls in a second here, but I'm told you do one heck of a Bill Clinton impression.
Well, George, I certainly do appreciate it. I'm very pleased. I used to be the former president, and I am delighted. If Hillary wins, I get to go back to the White House.
I bet you're looking forward to that, aren't you?
The potential is there. Just when I thought my two terms impersonating the president were over, it looks like I might have another shot at it.
Let me tell you, if she gets nominated or if she wins and Bill is still around there, this could be an explosion for your career. My gosh.
Well, I hope so. I hope so. Just when you thought it was over, maybe it's not.
I will have to interview you one day as if you're Bill Clinton.
Well, it's going to cost you, George.
I'm sure it will. Let's take a few calls here. Let's go to Paul in Tacoma, Washington, west of the Rockies. Hey, Paul, welcome to the program. Go ahead.
Hi, good evening, George. Good evening, sir.
I've been
a listener since back when the X-Files were on, so y'all have done a great job.
Long time.
I'm a licensed mental health therapist, and I got involved, been working with children, adolescents and stuff that had, for sexual abuse or whatever, this, I would just use the term darkness, comes into their life, from some trauma. And the problem, what I wanted to ask you is that, you can walk. I work in, different psychiatric hospitals where these kids are locked up in, and the psychiatrists are mostly secular, okay? So they won't even take into an account any kind of spiritual problem. And so we're brought in, as a part of a treatment team, and you can just feel the heaviness. And the thing is I got out of it. It destroyed my life, my marriage and everything, because the stuff started following you home. And it's like, even today, okay, I haven't been involved in the field in 12, 15 years. And, I get all kinds of supernatural stuff. I've had to go back into medieval Golden Dawn, John Dee, all this kind of stuff and try to look up, rituals, from things and stuff like that, putting kosher salt around your house and in your room and making people say Jesus Christ came in the flesh, all kinds of things to try to prevent this. It's like a force. It has an identity, and you can feel the heaviness, you know. I mean, like when you walk in there, and after work, we get off, we just go to Bennigan's and sit there and drink gin and tonics and just look at each other, just couldn't believe, you know, the stuff that we've been through that day. But because confidentiality rules, we couldn't talk about it. I mean, like, in your experience with working with other priests and things like that, and your brotherhood and so forth like that, do you see that people have that same kind of problem, that the supernatural, if you get involved in working and trying to help people, that you end up getting attacked and you can't get rid of it?
Was that ever a concern of yours, Patrick, when you were doing this?
You mean when I was with the brothers and when I was working with patients?
Yeah.
I never reached the point where I was with patients as an Lexington Brothers. However, I have a long period of clinical endeavors in my background, but not as an Lexington Brother. And I will tell you that what Paul was describing as getting involved with patients, that is not only true with psychiatric problems, that is true of men and women working with pediatric patients that are dying, cancer, all of these things. The professionals get wrapped up in this, and you just can't help but finding it difficult to deal with this. I have never worked in the psychiatric field, and so I cannot identify with what you say, except tell you that I understand what it's like to be involved in a particular discipline when you have people who need you.
Patrick, I believe the Catholic Church has 120 trained exorcists. That's a lot. They take this seriously, don't they?
It is. I ran into an interesting experience, George. Nearing the completion of the book, I learned that an individual, a priest, had come from Texas to conduct a program here, and exorcism was part of it. I contacted him. He agreed to meet me. I drove for several hours and caught up with him, and he made me promise that I would not say who he was, that he would not confirm or deny anything. But I found it it got the hair up on my back when he began to describe to me what he deals with, and which made me think, gee, maybe what I have been hearing about what took place in 49 with the Alexian brothers in St. Louis and a boy that was possessed and or exorcised, I thought, gosh, maybe there's something to this.
Well, there's no question about it. They take it seriously, and it's got to be frightening. I have never been in a room when an exorcism was being performed. I'm not sure, Patrick, I'd want to. I really believe that these entities, these demons, whatever they are, I think they have the ability to attach themselves to people. I think the original priest of the two that were in that room that time during this exorcism of the little boy, yeah, I think they were really affected afterwards in their life.
Well, there were many that were. Understand there were not just two Jesuits there. There was a handful of Alexian brothers. At any given night or day or time, there were many people surrounding this young man and this exorcism process. There were students, Jesuit priests that were there in and out of St. Louis. So it wasn't just a few people. There are people that signed an agreement and an understanding what they saw. This is not for the public. I have not seen it. I don't even ask to see it because I figure that I can get more information about what took place if I behave myself than go out and then instead of going out and trying to tell a story that's not quite so true.
Who's on the cover of the Abbey and Me? Is that you?
Well, I'm glad you asked. No, that is a brother John Howard, a fine man. He was involved in the recruiting process back when I was in high school. So in the mid-60s, he would make his way around the country, meet young men that wanted to be Alexian Brothers, and he would sort of report back, this looks like a good guy, let's go after him. And then others that maybe didn't qualify so well. But that is Brother John Howard, alive and well, a man with a great sense of humor. And I'm glad you asked about him.
He looks kind of spooky. He looks like an exorcist by himself, doesn't he?
Look at him very carefully. Does he look like Boris Karloff, maybe?
He sure does, standing in front of what looks like a haunted mansion.
He looks scary, but you couldn't ask for a nicer man.
You know, they don't build facilities like this anymore, Patrick.
No.
They don't. You know, you drywall it up and everything. This thing is solid. Wow.
You'll notice the dome on the front, the dome on the monastery itself.
Yeah.
And the pleasure of rescuing the dome, transporting it to Chicago, and it now sits on the property of the Alexian Brothers Hospital in Elk Grove Village, Illinois.
We go next east. Mike is with us in Richford, Wisconsin. Maybe that's close. Hey, Mike, go ahead.
Hey, thank you, George, for taking my call.
Sure thing.
Hi, Patrick. There's a monastery. I was born and raised in Chicago. Now, there was a place called Peabody's Tomb, and we were all afraid to go around there because the monks would come out, jump out of the trees, and they would grab you and make you pray. And Peabody was embalmed. And also another monastery was in Sheboygan, Wisconsin. We used to go fishing there. It's so beautiful. Have you heard of those places?
The first place, it's only recently that someone told me a little bit about that. But that's all I really know about that. As I recall, I thought it was that perhaps a Franciscan that had told me that may have been a property that had been given by the Peabody, I believe it was the Peabody family.
Mm-hmm.
I may have this all mixed up, but I sort of remember what you've been told, but I don't know any details.
Patrick, the Abbey and Me, of course, written about your personal experience at the monastery, and you got out of it. How come you never went back? You just didn't want to? And when I say go back, I mean to become a brother.
I thought about it. At age 18, who knew what they wanted to do at age 18?
I did.
Well,
I wanted to be in broadcasting. That's all I did. And my dad wanted me to be a dentist.
So you're an exception, George.
Maybe.
Look at young people today. You know, they will extend their college days way beyond. They're still living with their parents, and I'm not blaming them. I'm just saying that life has changed. But more in answer to your question, yes, when I left, I was unsure whether I should have left. I thought maybe I made the wrong decision.
Patrick, stand by. We're going to come back in a moment, wrap things up with you. We'll take final calls, and I'll let you finish up that story. Next hour, David Kessler joins me. Worked with Elizabeth Kubler-Ross on Death and Dying. He's going to talk all about that stuff. It's going to be good. Make sure you're part of it. And our television program, that's pretty good, too. I'm impressed with that. BeyondBelief.com. You can go to that website. Take a look at it. 10 days free. Always look at something free before you buy, right? BeyondBelief.com. We've got some great guests coming up. And in addition to our television show, you have access. It's like Netflix to all kinds of videos that are available there. So take a look at it. It is a rapidly growing television program, BeyondBelief.com. Welcome back with Patrick Rick, his work, The Abbey and Me. And of course, Patrick, as we get into the possibilities of all, I mean, this has always fascinated me, just the mindset, monasteries, exorcisms, all that stuff is great. But so you contemplated going back to the brothers, but you decided not to?
I was tempted. As still a young man, I was still tempted. I'm thinking, you know, maybe I just didn't give it a good enough chance. itself to just simply go back and look at the place. Moving back to Texas, I got involved in medical equipment sales, diagnostic imaging, MRIs, and CAT scanners. So I found myself doing well in medical sales. So poverty was not looking like something in my picture that I would do well with. So I simply did not go back. But I have sort of reconnected with the Alexian brothers, and I believe I have somehow been used for a different purpose. Not a greater purpose, but a different purpose.
Well, in that purpose, do you know what it is yet?
Well, it was to write a book and with some accuracy, to tell the public about a monastery, to tell them about good people, to explore the reasons why the monastery was taken over by warriors, all those things. I feel like it's important that I tell the story from a different point of view rather than make it a sensational thing, although what I believe took place was probably sensational.
Let's go to some of the phones now with our special guest, Patrick Rick. Let's go to Phyllis in Aurora, Colorado. Hi, Phyllis.
Hi. You know, for years I have wanted to tell about this. And my mother was in the 60s in the mental hospital in Norwalk, California. They did her a tremendous amount of good, by the way. But at any rate, another doctor that was completely reliable and I trust immensely. He's passed on, so I can talk about this. He said that the head of Norwalk Hospital, the mental hospital in California, he said most of the people there were possessed. They were not mentally ill. And at the time, I was pretty young, and I just didn't know what to make of that. But as the years have gone by and I've watched various things that have happened, I think that's probably absolutely true.
Maybe so. Maybe so. You want to react to that, Patrick, at all?
I really don't have a comment. You know, not knowing the doctor, not knowing your caller, but I can appreciate, you know, that's something that she has remembered for a long time, and it was something she will die with, that knowledge that someone had an opinion about what took place. May or may not be right, but nonetheless, it is interesting. It is certainly interesting.
What got the brothers into hospitals? I mean, that was probably an initial huge investment. I don't know where they got the funding from that. It had to come from the Catholic Church. But what got them in that arena? And, of course, as we know, many sisters, are involved in hospitals as well. I mean, I guess the Catholic Church is heavy into hospitals, isn't it?
Well, in some ways, yes. The Alexian brothers date back to the 12th century.
Wow, like the Knights Templar, almost.
Well, they go way back, and the Alexian brothers, got their beginnings in Germany and that part of Europe. They began to take care of people, the unwanted people, the sick people, the dying people. And then finally, in the 14th century, there became a recognized a group of Catholic men. And that had grown into taking care of people in the Black Plague. So the Alexian brothers were there to make life better before they die. And those that had died of the Black Plague, the brothers were some of the very few people willing to bury them. So those were the very early days of the Alexian brothers getting involved in health care.
So what do you think will become of this monastery, the mansion?
I think eventually the mansion itself has dwindled down. Most of it has been destroyed, buried, which I find sort of interesting is that the monastery is still there. I tell people it is just buried. Literally, they dug a hole, dynamited it, and pushed it over. The only thing that remains is the mansion, which is nothing but an empty shell. And I think someday that will eventually be destroyed completely. And then somehow, some way, someone will probably purchase it and try to do something with it. It remains to be seen what that might be.
And the mansion in the front, is that on your cover? Is that what I'm looking at?
No, actually, to be honest with you, that picture in the book there, that picture was taken, 2006 or so.
Okay.
Because it had not been completed yet.
Okay, interesting.
The destruction had not been completed is what I meant to say.
Right, right. But, I mean, is it gone now, that portion?
That portion is gone. There is nothing but the mansion itself.
What was that, a little steeple on the top of it or a bell? What was that?
Well, that's a dome. That was once a gold dome that was plated with gold, and
wow.
That was taken down. And I asked the people who raised the building, I asked them to save the dome. It was stored away, and then eventually I loaded it up and trucked it down by myself to Chicago, presented it to the Alexian brothers. They have placed it outside their flagship hospital there in Elk Grove Village, Illinois.
St. Louis we go. Hi, Phil. That's where the exorcism was. Go ahead, Phil.
Good morning, gentlemen, from snowy St. Louis.
Oh, that's what I hear. Never stops.
It never stops. I was an orderly. I was the last orderly to work at Alexian Brothers Hospital before it was torn down.
Wow. Did you ever see that room, Phil, that the little exorcist was done in?
The orientation room was located just down the hall from that room. And we were given strict policy or procedure, I guess you could say, that you were not allowed to even loiter by the room under notice of you will be terminated.
Wow. Did they ever explain why? What they were afraid of?
There were never explanations given. There were innuendos thrown,
mm-hmm.
I guess you could say, that, yes, something happened here. Something happened in this room. We're not at liberty to discuss this item, but there were a limited number of key holders who could even access the room.
Do you think they thought that whatever demonic forces might have been involved with the little boy might still be hanging around that area?
There were always rumors, but you didn't make a right down the hall. You always made a left down the hall to avoid the room.
That's something. That's a great story. Patrick, that's one place I have never visited when I was in St. Louis and I moved there in 1979. I think the hospital was still there, might not have been opened yet. But I think the structure was still there, much like the monastery. In
what year was that, George?
1979.
That was approximately when that building was torn down, yes.
Yeah, right around then.
Right.
Something like that. I had heard that the furniture from that room was given out or sold, and that people complained that they felt that there were demons around it or something was wrong.
I have not heard that. I can tell you that furniture that was removed from the room, that is where the diary was found, or a copy of the diary that subsequently made its way into the hands of William Peter Blatty when he wrote the book, The Exorcist.
Okay, and then from there, then the movie.
That's right. That's right.
You know, you said earlier that Hollywood kind of really played it to the hilt, but did they come close at all to what you think might have happened there?
Do you mean the possessed girl, so to speak?
The head turning and the green, and all that.
No, that was quite an exaggeration. But I don't think anyone could have observed what was officially reported and call that a typical day at the hospital.
So now what do you do now, Patrick? What's the avocation?
I continue to write. I am a surgical consultant. I travel throughout the United States, and I go attend surgical procedures, and I tell the doctors what they ought to do and what they ought not to do.
They listen?
On occasions.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Austin, Texas has been a great place, dear to my heart. I've been there three times already, and I just love it. Are the bats still hanging under that bridge?
You would have to bring bats into a story about exorcism.
I would have to. Now, this is a bridge. For people who don't know this, there is a bridge in Austin, Texas, and underneath it, there must be a million bats that hang under that thing. How many, Patrick? What do you think?
Can I tell you? Can I tell you a quick story on that?
Yeah.
I have known about it. I know where they're supposed to live. I have never made it a purpose to go down and look at.
Really?
So maybe I should now.
You have to.
I will tell them that George sent me.
You have. Have you ever seen the bats in flight?
Pictures. Pictures only.
They cover the sky.
Yes.
Truly unbelievable. Okay, Dan is in Green Bay, Wisconsin, first-time caller. Hey, Dan, go ahead.
Hi. Hi. Yeah, I'm calling because I grew up just north of the novitiate, and at one point in time back in the early 90s, late 80s, our high school had combined with the Menominee and Indians for sports, and they took me down there. And that place was creepy because the buildings hadn't all been torn down, but it was completely like it was just abandoned. And it was massive, and it was very intricate stonework. Ironically, all of the passageways, unlike most northern buildings, were on the outside like they would be in the southern part of the United States, where it had balconies with entrances to the rooms. There was no really chairs or anything there. But there were, like, cooking equipment and stainless equipment in the kitchens. And it was just strange, and just you got this weird sense being there because there was all these satanic symbols written all over where the old nave used to be. Like pentagrams and all kinds of stuff.
You're absolutely right.
Coven's people took over. What happened there, Patrick?
It was a destination for young people in that part of Wisconsin to make a trip there. It was a place to drink and to make love.
And to party.
And to part, right.
Huh. So in terms of the defacing it, I guess that happens, doesn't it?
It was. The place was just torn up by every manner of adult and juvenile that went through there.
Do you miss that lifestyle at all? That kind of religious lifestyle?
I will treat that as sort of a been there, done that. I have a tremendous appreciation for those people that have stayed there for a very long career. I was a flash in the pan. And I will never, ever say I wish I had not gone, because it was an experience, and I learned something from being there.
Yeah, I bet you did. It's something that you keep with you for the rest of your life.
Yes.
You really do. The book, of course, is called The Abbey and Me, available at Amazon.com and other areas. Bookstores yet, Patrick?
Absolutely. Barnes & Noble, Amazon. You can get it as a Nook, as a Kindle, and there are more and more mom-and-pop stores providing it, because these mom-and-pop stores, they are really enjoying a comeback with books.
They are the bookstores of the future.
Yes.
In terms of the physical retail-type stores, the big places, I think, are going out the window, but the little mom-and-pop shops, they're flourishing.
Yes, they are.
And I think that's good. I think that's good that they're around and everything else. I vaguely remember the Menominee Indian takeover in 1975. I was 25 years old. I was a television producer in Detroit at the time. It didn't strike home, though it was close to Detroit. But I vaguely remember that. It wasn't really covered much in the media, was it?
No, part of the reason why this took place in 75 and a decade of anger from the Indians back then was sort of winding down. This was one of the last issues where very angry Native Americans wanted to wanted to solve a problem of theirs, and this was part of the way of doing that. Right or wrong, this was their way of doing it.
Was anybody ever arrested or any of that happen?
Absolutely. There were a handful of people that were arrested, and I think one of them, I believe that he was, I think he was there for 8 years.
Well, thank God we didn't have a Waco or a Ruby Ridge situation there.
This is part of the reason why the Alexian brothers, in the end, they did not want to see blood running down the monastery floors there.
And it could have happened.
They said, let's give it to the Indians for a dollar.
Which was probably pretty generous.
It was very generous. And it was not appreciated by the neighbors there. They thought, well, you know what? If we're going to give it away like this, it's just going to cause this to happen more and more. But, you know, it's one of those damned if you do and damned if you don't.
Yeah, no question about it. Well, Patrick, thanks for this. And, again, steer us to the YouTube video of this. How do we get there?
Simply go to YouTube, put the title of book, The Abbey and Me.
A-B-B-E-Y.
Yes.
Just like Westminster.
Very, very much like Westminster Abbey. That's right.
All right, Patrick. Thank you. You take care of yourself. Patrick Rick. Now, in a moment, we're going to be talking about a little bit about life after death, dying, grieving, and how to handle that. It's going to be an amazing couple hours just ahead on Coast to Coast AM. Follow us, by the way, on Twitter. Like us as well on Facebook. You do all that at Coast to Coast AM. Dot com.